Hey everyone, welcome to the Tribe Culture Life podcast, where our stories and our lives matter. I'm your host, Brittany Montgomery, and I invite you to listen in a few times a month as I chat about issues that we as members of the Black and POC communities face every day. I'll be sharing stories and perspectives that matter to you, from raising children to relationships, entrepreneurship, and traveling, and all aspects in between. If any of those topics interest you, you are definitely my tribe, and you are definitely in the right place. Hey guys, welcome back to the Tribe Culture Life podcast. Today we're talking with Kina Thomas, the mother of two sons, and we're chatting about how to speak with your kids, just about, I guess, racism, race relations, like, and then everything that's going on, I think specifically in the last couple of months. I've been friends with Kina on Facebook for a minute, and I've just seen a lot of your super positive posts, and I just thought it would be really cool to chat with you because you seem like you have some really good ideas for the rest of us who maybe have like questions or, you know, just kind of trying to navigate this whole situation. So thank you so much for joining me today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yes, of course. So I feel like, you know, it's such an important topic. It's important, like, I guess it's always been important, but I think it's been brought more to the forefront just with the recent events of like this summer and all of that. So I think I'm very glad that you're here, kind of chatting with me. I wanted to talk first about your open letter in Peekaboo magazine. First of all, it was beautifully written and I really enjoyed reading it. What was your motivation for writing the piece, and was it difficult to write?
So the first thing I want to say is thank you again. Thank you for allowing me to be here and have a space to talk about something that I absolutely love. And then as far as my motivation for writing the piece in Peekaboo magazine, my motivation is my boys. So I currently live in a community of 2% Black people. And across our country, you know, statistically for us, like we make up about 13%. Black people make up between 12 to 13% of our U.S. population. And so, again, I'm in an area that's 2%. So my motivation really was just to come open and clean to my area and make sure that they're aware that not only as a parent do I care, but I want to make sure to provide any resources and make myself available for things that are going on in our particular community. And you asked the question about whether or not it was difficult to write. Absolutely. It took me about a year between like the conception of that idea of writing something so bold to it actually come into fruition. So a little bit behind that story is the owner of the magazine, I had reached out to them. It's so interesting. I reached out to them a year prior because I had seen this little magazine across town and I never saw diverse children on the cover. And so I just sent a note on Instagram being like a very bold and courageous, you know, advocate for racial equity. And I said, hey, you know, I've noticed on your magazine cover, it doesn't show diversity within our community, but I have two boys that I think would be perfect for your cover, right? Yes. Like, and that resulted, I know, like I reached out to them. I want to say it had to be in March and my kids were the June cover. It was absolutely incredible. But I got to meet with the owner and we started chatting a bit. And I said, you know, but just in terms of what I was like, this is going to be so important to our community that we get ourselves grounded in this, because this is big for kids that look like them to actually, hone in on the cover. And the owner of the magazine was like, tell me about, you know, some of the experiences you've had here. So she's been really curious. And I started talking to her about it. And I said, you know, I feel like I should tell people in the community. I just don't know how, you know, I work this big corporate job. I'm not necessarily sure how that's going to come across. And, you know, so it was very, very difficult to write, but I'm so grateful that it finally came to fruition. And it was at the right time. The right time wasn't a year prior. It was at the moment that it was released, which was, you know, shortly following George Floyd's death and his murder. And, you know, we're being very, very honest from a community perspective and
Yes.
exercising empathy, it was received very, very well. And I'm grateful for that. So I hope that answers your question in a very long-winded way, but still.
No, it's perfect, and I think you touched on a really important point. It shouldn't be like controversial because these conversations need to happen, but I feel like especially when you put, a kind of controversial perspective out there, you're not really sure how it's going to be received. And so I kind of love that you went with it. The timing was just it turned out perfect. It was beautiful. And you went with it and you really just put yourself out there. So I really loved that. And that
Awesome.
was a great answer. So yeah, I think, and I'm curious, I know we're talking about, talking to your children and all of that, and we're definitely going to get to that. But, one of my biggest takeaways from the piece was, also, I felt like it was this very bold kind of call to action, for white parents. We're doing for us as black parents, I feel like most of us are doing kind of, the work with our kids. We're having the hard conversations and, we're discussing like world events and all of this stuff. And we really need it needs to be like an effort with from everyone, not just from us. And so that's kind of what I got from it. Do you feel like once the piece was made public, did that kind of open the door to conversations with like, your non-POC friends or coworkers or anything like that?
Absolutely. So immediately I gained support from the company I was working for at the
That's
time, which
awesome.
is the world's largest company. And so just to have their support really meant a lot to me. And we talked about it in the workplace, and it got way more exposure than I thought it ever would get. I thought it would only be really targeted towards the people who already were reading that magazine, but it went so far beyond that and beyond me in a lot of ways, because I know it's attached to purpose in a lot of ways, but really the acceptance of it was there because there's this hunger and desire to actually have information and someone to deliver it in a way that is not only absorbable, but a way that's also super approachable too. So I broke down the stereotype to begin with just by saying, I don't want to be seen as the angry black woman. Whatever your bias or whatever your stereotype is, I don't want to fit into that mold. But I do want you to understand my perspective. And this is also incredibly frustrating for me as a mom to not have you have those conversations with your children as they impact my children. And so that was really kind of the basis of it all. But I felt like overall there was a general acceptance to the letter. I will tell you, I felt a little bit of fear initially, and my own doing, because when you do something new, it's fearful. And then secondly, the racial climate in where I live in Arkansas, where it's not very many, diverse people or people of color. I felt like, oh my gosh, am I going to get my family in trouble? Am I going to get myself in trouble by talking about this? But, again, the purpose is beyond me, and it was placed on my heart to do it, and the time was at that moment to release it, and I couldn't be more grateful to actually have that as a call to action.
I love that. Yeah. And that's such a good point. To speak up and speak out, even now in 2020, it's very much a big thing. It's a big step. So thank you again. It was really awesome.
Yeah, my pleasure. I love it. I love that I was able to do it.
Yes. So how old are your boys?
Oh my gosh. Listen, whenever I talk about my boys, there's a general smile that is generated on my face. They are so amazing. So my youngest son is 9. His name is Timmy, and he is this amazing soul and just this great human being. And I couldn't be more grateful that I was chosen to be his mom. And Julian, my 11-year-old boy, is the sweetest soul I have ever met in my life. So my boys are 9 and 11, and they both are so purposeful in who they are. And I couldn't be more proud to be their mom. Could not be more proud.
I love that. And so what, I guess kind of what did those, well, first I'm curious, when you were growing up, did your parents talk to you a lot about race or kind of, chat about how things were going in the world?
Yeah, so to answer that question directly, yes.
My
Yeah.
parents talk to me about race all the time. I got the talk when I was pretty young. Grew up in a neighborhood, that was 99% black in St. Louis City, very segregated area to live. And reality was, my parents, taught my siblings and I, like, why we have to behave certain ways and what is acceptable socially for us, especially when it came to the police. And, it's interesting that you mentioned that because I have like a backdrop, a backstory that people don't know or realize why it's important for me to even talk about it. And a lot of that really does deal with my upbringing. So I have five brothers, and a sister. Again, my parents talked to us about race probably since I was about 4 or 5 years old. I can remember conversations about race happening. So it's a very comfortable subject for us to make sure that we were protected. And unfortunately, and I'm sharing this just because it's on my heart to share this as well. Unfortunately, one of my brothers was actually murdered by the police. And that occurred when I was about 14 years old and he was 20, about to turn 21. And what's so interesting about this time frame is yesterday would have been his birthday. And so it's just such an interesting time of year. And I felt like I had to speak out about this subject because it's been happening for a long time. Yeah,
So that was
absolutely.
27 years ago, that this happened to my brother, even though my parents talked to us about race. Even that in and of itself is not enough to stop a systemic bias that exists or some sort of, problems that can occur within the environment. And I was taught specifically what to do. I was taught when you are pulled over, it doesn't matter. Even me at 4 or 5 years old, you put your hands up if you see the police. You show that there's a surrenderance that occurs there. And these are discussions that, to answer the second portion of kind of where this is going, these are discussions that are modeled with my own children, right? So I'm very, very transparent, very, very honest with my boys. I've been talking to them since my youngest was about 3 and my oldest was about 4 about race.
Yeah, that's and it's crazy 'cause I think if you don't live it, as a black person, that probably sounds like really young. And I know for me, my oldest is 4, and then we have a 2-year-old and a 6-month-old. And I look at my 4-year-old and it's difficult. You know what I mean? It's hard to even like know where to start 'cause you don't want to scare them and you don't want to like kind of go and instill like fear and distrust, but at the same time, like you said, they need to know what's up because I mean, at some point their life could depend on it. And it's a scary thought to think that, basically you, like your parents did, you have the conversations and you do all of that. And in the end, it still doesn't matter. It has to be from everyone, not just from not just from black people and like activists and all of that. We need that. That's a really good point. We need systemic change. We really do. So you said you started talking to your children when they were young. What did those early conversations look like?
Yeah, so unfortunately, and this is one of the things that like lit a fire in my soul. Unfortunately, when my son was 3 years old, I had not had the conversation. My youngest son was 3 years old. I had not had any conversations with him about race. And he came home one day from this private daycare, amazing school, and he said, "Mommy, I don't want to be brown anymore." Broke my heart, completely broke my heart. And I said, tell me a little bit more about that and like explain to me what's happening. Comes to find out, these twins were teasing him about the color of his skin, telling him brown skin stinks, at 3 years old.
At
And
three.
at 3 years old, picking on him for his differences, his points of differentiation amongst, that environment. And I immediately did what I do best. I sprung into action with
Of
figuring out how
course.
to provide resources. One, my biggest job is to protect my babies,
Of
right?
course.
Like, that's the most important thing I had going at that moment. I dropped, I worked for a very supportive place at the time for a really good person. And I told her, I said, "Hey, I'm going to take some time off and I'm going to actually go to the daycare and well, the preschool at the time, and I'm going to explain to them about differences in race and offered diversity training as far as race is concerned. So the school made way for me to do that, and based on my education, felt like I was qualified enough to take on that action. And I went in, and basically the way that I've talked to my kids about race really came from, I took a brown egg and a white egg, and I asked for the difference between those eggs. And I had saw it on YouTube somewhere, but I started adding like a little bit of a spin to it. And once they, you know, we started talking about differences, like one is more round than the other, you know, obviously one's brown, one's white, you know, one's more oval shaped than the other, one's bumpy, more smooth, you know, like we went through those differences on the outside. And then I had the kids turn around, and I cracked the egg. Well, I, you know, kind of shuffled the eggs around, switched their places, cracked them open, hid the shells, and they turned around, and I said, "Now tell me what the difference is between the eggs." And they couldn't find the difference between the eggs. And that was a very powerful thing to talk about, because while we all have differences on the outside, our inside is really what's most important. And then even if you think about what's the purpose on of eggs, the purpose of eggs is to make some sort of nutritious meal, right? Or at the end of the day, for baking, whatever the case may be. But actually, you can take the white egg along with the brown egg, you can crack them both, you can actually mix those together and still have a fantastic outcome. And so that was really more of the story and the message that I went behind, in a way that I did that with kids that were so young.
I love that. And I think I love that because I know I was reading the other day, you know, we've all read, you know, the statistics and how they think some children, of course, you know, they start to notice the differences in like skin tone and all that as young as 6 months. So from such a young age, they're kind of already making their own like assumptions and forming their own thoughts, you know, and categorizing people based on, you know, this kind of this category, the skin tone. So it's really up to us as parents to kind of help that along and make sure they can explore that in a healthy way. And I remember when you shared the egg post and I thought, "Oh my God, that's so cute." What an awesome way to break it down. You know, I feel like some adults could benefit from that too, but what an awesome way to break that down, you know, for children and kind of, you know, break it down on their level. I thought that was really cute.
Awesome. Thank you. I can't take full credit for it. I can take credit for developing the idea in a more I think in a more kid-friendly way than the original was, but I just took to YouTube as a resource at that time, and went with what I had available to me. So really grateful for that. Super grateful for it.
And so are there any other creative ways that you have been able to have these discussions with your kids and that you might want to share with our audience that's kind of maybe looking for, I guess, ways to do it themselves?
Yeah, I think that the only other thing I will say is really just kind of what not to say to your kids, though. Like, you know, as you're going through that, like saying you don't see color is like saying, you know, you don't see black people, which isn't true, right? I've seen so many people post, you know, their kids, and they're at, you know, they'll have a black kid and a white kid next to each other, and they're like, "Well, what's the difference between them?" Literally, see color first, right? Like, we know that
Right,
the color
absolutely.
exists. We're taught colors really, really, really early on. So I would say, don't encourage your kids not to necessarily understand the difference in colors, but more so getting behind understanding those unique ways that those cultures and those ethnicity play a role in society in general. That should be more of the gear and focus. As far as like examples of how to adequately talk to a kid about race, I would say the most important things to remember is to make sure it's coming from a place of love and not discipline. Don't wait until it's too late to have those conversations. And it should be very casual. And it should be very often until it gets more comfortable, because you're not necessarily an expert on the subject of, you know, race. I'm not the expert either. I don't believe experts exist on a human matter like this. But I do know that, like, just like you've researched your last, you know, paper, or you've done your last assignment for work, if you pour some time into it and you go in with this mentality that we can all do this together and we can learn together, your kids not only respect you for it, but they'll also be on that journey with you. So I think the way you approach the conversation is more so, how do we do this together? And then how do we find resources together? And I think it has to be coming from this place of love, not discipline. And then it also needs to come in a very comfortable environment to have those conversations. Talking to your kids about race should be just like talking to them about school, in my opinion. It should be just that sort of conversation, because you want that openness in relationship to be there. And the minute you stay away from those conversations, you're actually staying away from a relational side that you can connect and influence on. And they're going to not make you very proud at the end of the day, because you didn't talk about your family's values and perspectives with those. And so while I don't have a specific example to share, I would say that those are some tactics that I know will work.
Right, absolutely. I think that's a really great point. And I'm curious because I know you said you, I'm curious because I know you said you had some of the first conversations when they were so much younger. How have the, if they've changed at all, how have, how has that discussion changed as they've gotten older?
So they are a lot more willingness to share it with me, right? Because I never overreact to race conversations. That should be a thing. And I didn't necessarily write about that. I wish I would have. If there's one correctable, I think on my part, I would have written about the reaction that you have to those, because that makes the difference on comfortability with talking about things. So my kids are very, very comfortable talking to me about anything because of the relationships that we have with one another. But about race in particular, it's a super casual way that they bring up the conversation. One, because they know I'm not going to overreact. I don't, I'm not going to call anybody a name. I'm not going to, I'm not going to, show my frustrations visibly in front of them. I may say things like, "Well, that's upsetting. Like that's not fair. I'm sorry you had to go through that." Like things like that in front of them. And then, in the background, I'm upset, or to my husband, I might be really, really fired up about it. But I never really show those emotions to the kids, because I want to create an environment where they feel comfortable talking to me about it. And they're not going to feel comfortable if I overreact. And so I think at the way the conversations happen now in my household is they're pretty casual conversations. Like we literally just talked yesterday at dinner about it, because my youngest son told me, he said, "Mom, like I feel like somebody said something the wrong way." Because when he got his hair cut off, like he went from having, more of the high top to like a lower fade on his hair. And he said, somebody talked to him about it and said, "This doesn't look like you. It doesn't look like black people." And, that's upsetting, right? Like,
Yeah,
what an
definitely.
upsetting thing to say. Like,
What
what
does
good
that even
kid says
mean?
that? Like, what are you talking about right now? And then, so he has some questions about that. And so I just asked like his perspective on it. Like, how do you feel about it? How did you respond to that? And, I drafted an email first thing this morning to let the teacher know, like, "Hey, these are the kind of conversations that are happening. You might want to have some conversations with the rest of your class." But at the same time, my son has been given this confidence where he doesn't feel inferior. He feels like he feels empowered to say things to me about it and to speak up for himself. But that's another crucial reason why having those racial conversations are important, is because you don't want your kid, if you're a black mom, you don't want your kid to feel inferior. And if you're a white mom, you don't want your kids making other kids feel inferior. And
Absolutely.
so I mean, we have very, very open dialogue as a family about it, and it happens very often. And I don't re overreact in any of those situations. I try to take a very logical lens to it all. Sometimes it's hard though. Like, let's keep it real. Sometimes it's hard to do that, but that's just the truth.
I love that. And I also loved how you were like, basically, let me go ahead and jump on this email and let the teacher know what's happening. 'Cause that speaks to, of course, we're all mama bears and we all go hard for our babies. But I think black moms, especially dealing with these different situations, like you really have to go hard sometimes and really jump in and say, hey, this can't happen again. Like, let's figure this out. I love that. So did you speak with them specifically talking about, the events of this summer with the police killings and then the protests and all of that? Have you guys discussed that at all?
We've had some very fruitful dialogue about that. So, the video of George Floyd was everywhere,
Of
and
course.
it was undeniable. My kids have access to the internet. And so, of course, friends are talking about it, people are talking about it, and they were really, really frustrated with it all, in the belief that this is unfair and is this what happened to our uncle? Did it happen in this way? Right? So it sparked like this dialogue and these questions about it, and even more so about like just the human race in and of itself and how Black people are viewed and why. And so they were curious about it. And so as a parent, went and did as much research as I could about how to make sure we had healthy dialogue about it regularly. We didn't shy away from it, didn't make it seem like it wasn't important to talk about because it was very important. It was on their hearts. They could see themselves as Black men, going through a scenario where there's some unfair things that could occur. And so for the boys, we talked about it. We talked about the protests that occurred. We talked about the history of protests as far as we know and can remember. We talked about, our history and people in general. We talked about the system designed and working the way it was intended to work. And we talked about the things that are important to our family as far as values are concerned. We even talked about the negativity that comes along with the looting. We talked about like both the negative aspect of it as well as the people who have made us proud and stood up and said, I want to be an ally for you. I want to go out here and I want to protest as well. I know it's not something I can directly relate to, but this isn't fair. So I want to be on the front lines marching and talking about this as well. And I think what I've shared with my boys that resonates with them regularly is this path that we're on is not a moment in time. These moments have always happened. It's just there hasn't been a camera to their face, or there hasn't been something that has been out there that like allows you to see, firsthand exactly what happened. But we have to use this as fuel for a movement, and that movement and journey that we go on together has to be one in which like we're committed to everybody being treated fairly, even in a place where we don't believe the system itself feels fair. From, everything from the history of inheritances, the history of, banks and home ownership and all of their economic influence to where Black people are today and have been treated unfairly today, those things come up in conversation with our children. And in order for us to have that dialogue, we have to know that dialogue. So we take the time to learn those things so that we're being very, very fruitful in conversations and we can answer whatever questions that they have. The topic of race is uncomfortable for most people. In my house, it's more normalized. We've taken that uncomfortable feeling away by creating this space for them to talk to us about anything at any time. And I'm hoping that that translates to other life issues too, to other things that come up, just to say, hey, mom's a busy woman. I know she's busy career-wise, but I can go sit down in her office anytime and talk to her about these things and she'll drop and stop because that relationship is more important than a job that she does every day. And I think that's an important message to sort of have with your kids is that like they are the most important thing you got going.
Absolutely. I love that. That's such a great point. It's not, it seems like you have such a, I don't know if holistic is the right word, but such like an all-encompassing approach to it. So it's not just about having open conversations about race and, the specific events that happened this summer, but basically about fostering an open relationship just altogether so that anything they want to talk to you about, they feel comfortable in bringing that to you. And like you said, you stop everything. Okay, cool. Let's have the talk. Let's discuss. So that's really awesome.
I will tell you, I don't always feel prepared to have that conversation. I don't, and sometimes it catches me off guard, and I'm not in the mood for that, to be honest with you. But I have it. I have it. I'm like, woo, okay. So this is what we're talking about
Here we
today at the
go.
moment. Here we go. Okay. Like
I love that. And so you said your boys are, what was it, 10 and 11 or 10 and 12?
9 and 11. So they
Nine and
spend
11.
half the year sounding like they're 2 years apart, and the other half of the year sounding like they're about a year apart. So
Got you. Got you. And so they're coming up now, you know, in just a few short years, they'll be more independent and they'll be going on dates and going to the movies alone. And so now they'll be kind of interacting, you know, with the world on, I guess, a much less supervised, you know, in a much less supervised way. Have you started to have those discussions about, you know, what happens if you do get pulled over by the police, or just kind of how to handle yourself in general?
Absolutely. So a part of the conversations we were having early on, I'm talking like when they were 3 and 4, mm-hmm. was how to handle yourself if dad gets pulled over
gotcha.
And you're in the car.
Gotcha.
Right. So a lot of that is leading by example too on how we feel. And, you know, my heart races in those scenarios because it was a being pulled over by the police that ended my brother's life.
Right.
And
course.
So with that being said, I probably have a little bit higher anxiety when it comes to the thought of them, you know, being in scenarios that aren't fair. And, you know, my brother knew what to do. And, you know, I'm making sure that my kids understand what to do as well. So we've definitely had those conversations. And there's definitely, you know, a bit of hesitation that comes along with it on my part. Mm-hmm. But I haven't necessarily distilled this, you know, distrust in police officers. As a matter of fact, I sit on the board of my local sheriff's office, like Police Athletics League. And I'm nice. Very intentional about doing that because I want the kids to have a very healthy relationship with the police mm-hmm. in general. Mm-hmm. I want them to have a viewpoint that, you know, most people are here to help you. While there yeah. are people and the system itself is not necessarily designed to help you, like, I want you to know, like, when you get pulled over, you put your hands up. This is what we do. Like, mm-hmm. this is the way it is in America today. You put your hands up. I know that you're, you know, 3 or 4, but this is what you do. You mm-hmm. don't talk back. You don't ask any questions. And you follow what dad does. So, you know, in this scenario, what works really well for my family is that my husband was a military police officer.
Okay.
So he understands protocol as well, right? Mm-hmm. So he understands, like, you know, not moving too quickly or swiftly or putting ourselves in a situation where we're trying to talk back. Mm-hmm. But rather, you know, some people are just, you know, power hungry. And yeah. want to make you feel inferior, and, you know, having pride in that moment or talking back in that moment won't get you very far. I was pulled over by the police, I want to say about a month and a half ago on my way to visit family in St. Louis. It was 10 o'clock at night and I was by myself. And, you know, you're in the passing lane and yeah. They had the police had on their lights to get into like the right lane. Well, I was already in the right lane. And by the time they had turned on the light, I couldn't get over because there was a car next to me. Mm-hmm. And so I, you know, I kept going and the police pulled me over. And when he pulled me up, which is a really jerky thing to do, by the
yeah,
way.
Yeah.
But when he pulled me over, I knew it was about power for him. And he came and he knocked on my passenger side window as opposed to, you know, going to the driver's side window. And I literally did everything possible to make sure he knew where my hands were at all times and that my tone wasn't one of a retail executive. My tone was one of just like this humble, you know, down to earth person that, like, I respect, you know, the police. That mm-hmm. was really what was going on in my mind. While he's being a complete jerk for pulling me over for something so ridiculous,
yeah.
I had, you know, an attitude of reflection then where I could have been very angry mm-hmm. and very upset, which I was,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't visibly show that to him.
Mm-hmm.
I just said, hey, you know, well, he said, do you know why I pulled you over? And I said, please explain, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then he told me that he pulled me over because I should have gotten over faster. And,
wow.
and I said, and exactly, that's ridiculous, yeah,
that's,
ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's so ridiculous. And it's such a power move. At
mm-hmm.
10 o'clock at night with a black female by herself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I said, you know what? I apologize. I
mm-hmm.
apologize that I didn't get over quick enough. And he said, you know, in most states, like, it's illegal to do that. I said, thank you for letting me know.
Yeah.
Right? That's
yeah.
all I could do at that moment. Because are you going to really write me a ticket for this?
Yeah.
Because do you know how ridiculous you're being at the
yeah.
moment?
Yeah.
And so I just had to deal with situations like that, and I talked to my boys about it because I wanted them to know about that. So, there's practical examples that happen every day, and I think we have to live this life to create safety and trust around us, even when people are being jerks like he was being.
I just want to say thank you so much for, and that's, first of all, that's crazy. It shouldn't be so unbelievable. Like, I don't know why I'm surprised, but that is insane. And I think kudos to you for, having the wherewithal to make sure to conduct yourself, basically with de-escalation in mind. I feel like that's what they're supposed to be trained in. And in all other,
Absolutely.
yeah, like in all other aspects of life, like, most people are not just gonna let someone kind of like talk to them any kind of way or push them around. And I think for some people, it's so hard to wrap your mind around, someone pulls me over for something silly, and then right off the bat, they are negative or nasty or, just rude and unkind. But you still have to, especially black people, we still have to, like, okay, cool, thanks for letting me know. Won't happen again, So that's, I don't want to say it's awesome because it's crazy, but thank you for so much for sharing that story with us for sure.
Of course.
Yes. Yeah. And I really appreciate you being so open and honest. I did not know about your brother, so thank you so much for sharing that with us. And just kind of like letting us into your lives. I think it, one of the reasons I started this kind of whole thing with the podcast and the blog was just to share those perspectives because it's so important to get those out there. And like you said, like we've discussed all throughout today, like this is not something that just became a problem this summer. It's always been an issue. And for every one story that you hear about in the news, there are 15 or 20 others that never make it beyond, local news. And we don't know about everything. So it's so important to share. So I really do appreciate it.
Absolutely, my pleasure. I'm glad to be
Yes.
able to share my family, my perspectives, and all of that jazz as well. Super grateful for
Yes.
that.
Yes. So I do want to leave it on a hopeful note. We are, our babies are, of course, the future. They're all going to go on to do great things. And it is my strongest belief that moms like you, like we're doing God's work really by, raising our babies, raising them culturally sensitive and smart young men, and also raising them to just take up space, like speak up for themselves, say when something makes you uncomfortable, all of that. So, but I did want to ask you, so what are some of the really cool aspects? Like I always say, like I love us. So what are some of the really cool aspects of Black culture that you've been able to kind of introduce them to and enjoy together as a family?
I will tell you, like, just about Black culture. That's such an interesting, question because I feel like, my kids are living examples of, a first generation college student that like doesn't give up, right? And so one of the things that's so dope about our culture, and I have to use that terminology, one of the things that's so dope about our culture is this ability to understand multiple environments. Like we know when to say certain things in certain rooms and to certain people. And that in and of itself is a pure leverage that you have as a Black person in understanding both, because most people are super narrow, but we've had to open ourselves up to understand both so that not only we're accepted in both, but that we get and maximize both as well. So I love the image that's created. I love the aspect of, us being stronger and, having the ability to do things outside of what cultural norms say that we do, and us pushing ourselves a little bit further. I love everything, as trivial as it may sound. I love everything from our hair and style to, our ability to be nimble enough to flex around certain environments. And that is one of the most amazing things about being Black to me is, you also get into rooms and there's an immediate connection with a head nod, right? To other folks that understand your struggle, understand the journey. And then what I love too about being Black is this, there's something about asking for help. And I've learned this pretty early on in my career about like asking folks for help, because when you ask for help, you will get it. You're in a situation literally where people want to help. The intentionality is good there. And if you can ask for that help, it can propel you beyond your wildest dreams. So I love that aspect of it as well. And I talk to the boys all the time. We have funny sayings around the house. And I'm like, we talk to them all the time about, this is something that is, usually culturally accepted, or, oh, I'm not sure. Like, I'm not sure. I'm not so sure. You sure you want to do that? Like, I'm not necessarily sure. But I love that they get to understand those differences. I love that they love soul food. They love, Southern American Black cuisines, like greens and candy yams and things like that. So I love that they're growing up Black in a scenario where traditionally at this point, that's not what's around them, and then that they love themselves, that they come to a point where they're like, you know what? I'm proud to be Black. Like, it's a shame that everybody doesn't get this experience. Like, it's a shame that you don't have this. So instead of them looking at what they don't have, it's looking at, people around them and saying, you know what? They wish they should have this. I'm pretty sure about it. So those are the things I love about being Black. And I also love about being a Black mom is to instill that sort of positivity into their lives about appreciating who they are in this moment alone, but then also understanding the future being so bright for them as people. And even the moments from this summer and how that plays into us being, hopeful about our futures together rather than being doom and gloom about what's happening today, looking at the impact of what tomorrow can be because of it.
I love that. I love that. Well, we're going to go ahead and wrap it up. Thank you again. And how can we find you on socials or anything like that if we want to connect with you?
I think the best way to actually find me is on Instagram.
Perfect.
On Instagram, it is The Real Kina,
Okay.
and is TheReal Kinna. And that is probably where I would say would be the easiest way to connect. I am on Facebook under my normal name,
Gotcha.
Kina Thomas. And then, as far as any other social channels are concerned, it's usually Kina Thomas or The Real Kina. But either way, like, I'd love and welcome any connections and new friends across the country. I'm looking forward to it, actually.
Perfect. So we'll drop your links in the show notes, I think we call it now. We'll drop them in the show notes so that everybody can come and find you. And thank you again for joining me today. And see you guys later.
Thank you.
Hey y'all, thanks so much for listening to this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. If you're new here, join our tribe and hit that subscribe button. And be sure to come and find me on Instagram at itsbrittany24 and tell me what you thought of this week's episode. I value your opinions and your feedback, so feel free to leave a comment or shoot me a DM and let me know your thoughts. Until next time.